Hi, everyone, and welcome to AB Conversations, where we will help you CFP your way out of it, a podcast where you get into the minds of a couple certified financial planners on how we think and feel about everyday financial planning questions and what should really matter most to you. A healthier financial life starts now.
Hey, Adam. How are you doing today?
Hey. Doing great. How are you? It is Podcast Friday.
It's the best day to cook is the bad dad joke. Friday.
Oh, man.
Yeah, really bad. Really bad. But looking forward to the weekend. We got a little sunshine. Yeah. It's feeling a little warmer around here. Lifts mm-hmm. the spirits. Love it.
Yeah. And if this comes out, you know, a month into the future, it'll definitely be warmer.
Yeah, right. So let's kind of give the lay of the land for the talk today. AB Conversations. Peeling back the curtain a little bit, we meet a lot of new people, and it's kind of like a box of chocolates when you meet someone and they're starting to talk about investments and kind of what they own. You mm-hmm. never really know until you start looking at some statements and digging a little deeper into what it is that they exactly have used or invested in before. And we're going to actually go into the conversation on things that we find that are products. Right, that are things that people are maybe obligated to or signed a contract for, and kind of what do you do in that situation, recognizing that it's our job to be objective, but that's not a world we live in anymore.
Yeah, so that's the key for us is that we haven't sold a product in a very long time. It's just does not align with our philosophies on planning and investing. But we do run into a lot of people that have, to your point, have these products, as whatever you want to call them, right? It's annuities, it's life insurance, maybe it's a structured product or a real estate investment trust, something like that that may not be fully liquid. And then the question often is to us, what should I do with it? Is this something I should continue to own? Is this something I have to continue to own? Like, do I have other options? And then it really does fall to us in a planning process to try to figure out if it's something that is flexible or replaceable, what's the best path forward? And if not, how do we then build around it to have it still be an efficient part of the puzzle as best we can?
So then let's talk about what are those considerations. If somebody does feel, or we need to share with them, you're kind of stuck with this. How do we come to that conclusion? What are we really looking to understand about those contracts to make that assessment?
Ooh, where do you want to start? Should we start with a specific one?
Contracts that may have penalties or timelines. Yeah. I mean, you used the word illiquid. Let's maybe go through that side of it.
Yeah, so the first thing that I think the most prevalent for us is an annuity. We see those most frequently when it comes to the investment side of the product world. Because oftentimes people that have either dealt with another advisor or a bank relationship in the past, that's like the next step up from somebody, their savings at the bank. They may have been sold a fixed annuity, which is like a CD, but it is usually a much longer contract. Where we see this in the longer term is what is considered a variable annuity. And that's not necessarily a fixed rate of return. It is an investment. It can fluctuate, but they are contractual, as you said, and those terms vary widely. We've seen some don't have an investment term that you must own it for so long before you can make a change. Some are 7 years, 10 years, longer, where you're tied into that for an extended period of time where you can't necessarily access the full lump sum without some sort of penalty back to the insurance carrier. Yeah. And I guess I'll clarify, not all annuities are created equally. And depending on what type of an account you own it in, changes your potential options. So right off the bat, the simplest, right? If you own an annuity within a retirement account, IRA, Roth IRA, 403b, something like that, that is a retirement account, you can move from that annuity to another retirement account. Doesn't necessarily have to be another annuity with more often than not, minimal impact from a from that standpoint. And I should say, when I say minimal impact, I mean from a tax standpoint, right? Yep. You can move from a retirement account to a retirement account. You don't have to pay any taxes. There still may be that contractual side of it, as you hinted right earlier, that may limit what you can do within certain timeframes. Go ahead. I need to take a breath.
Yeah, take a deep breath. Yeah. So contract penalties, liquidity, yeah, you're probably going to go taxes. Then we sometimes see somebody that may have chosen or been recommended a non-retirement, a non-qualified annuity. And yep, that is where it gets really sticky. So I'll maybe try to pick up, I think, where you're leading, yes, off there.
Yeah.
What you've really done, and I don't want to confuse this matter, but what you've, mm-hmm, really done in purchasing a non-retirement annuity is made that money feel like it's retirement dollars, right? Yeah. Not only, regardless of contract, not only does it now mean that you can't really access it without certain penalties before the age of 59 and a half, mm-hmm, which is a magic age in IRA world, yep, but you've deferred all the taxation on any growth or income that you would have had until that time when you start taking money out. So yeah, it really can create a little bit of work on our end to help people consider that. That to me is probably where you feel most stuck, right? Because yeah, regardless of the contract, there may be more significant tax implications if you try to do anything different.
Yeah. And that last part is the key. And that is the biggest hurdle, because they are, as you said, you're essentially what was non-retirement dollars, and you're almost putting it underneath a retirement, yeah, umbrella from a tax perspective.
It's like a weird hybrid thing.
It absolutely is. And here's the worst part: by doing that, right, let's say you put $50,000 into a non-retirement annuity, it grows to $100,000. Hey, great, we participated, we got growth. When you go to pull that money out or you want to change direction, those gains are not taxed at the capital gains rate as you would in any other, right, investment, yeah, account. They are taxed as ordinary income because that's how retirement dollars are taxed. So what was sold may have been sold as a way to avoid some taxes along the way. You're
that's
now
a short-term thing. Yeah.
Yeah, you're now trading that in for potential to pay more taxes later in life. Or again, it may just hamper your ability to be flexible with that account. So it can get complicated pretty fast, but yeah, the biggest downside is to make that move with a non-retirement annuity. Any gains that you have are taxable at your ordinary income tax rate.
Right. So when we say, are you stuck? It may not be those contractual obligations. We would want, right, to be really thoughtful on the tax side, where doing something, yeah, different, you don't want to trigger dominoes that are going to affect everything else. And yeah, I know that we've said this in different, iterations of this conversation, but, mm-hmm, you know, so many of the things around retirement, whether it's healthcare expenses, Social Security taxation, yada, 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 it is what you pay in income taxes is really relative to what the income sources are. You know, what healthcare credits, mm-hmm, you may get may be, mm-hmm, dependent on your income. So you really, especially at that phase of life, need to be so much more sensitive to how you're claiming income in a given year, and making a switch with an investment like this may trigger taxation that you didn't know about. So
yeah,
really have to be thoughtful and careful about making changes when there are products, as you said, kind of behind that.
Yeah. So I guess the good news is that there are other options. Right. So I'll throw this one out there. If it is this specific case where it's a non-retirement annuity, you have gains, you don't necessarily want to trigger more taxation, but you don't love the investment or the product that you have, you can do what's called a 1035 exchange. That's just the IRS code, right? You can move from one annuity to another annuity without triggering that taxation. It's like a retirement plan rollover, right? You can take money from a 401k, you roll it into an IRA. You're not triggering any taxes. You're moving it from like account to like account. So you can do that same thing within the annuity space, move from one annuity to another. It would just, you would want to be mindful of what is that other product, right? Because you're also buying, yeah, a product then that you're replacing it with. And the annuity world has come a long way, even in the time we've been in the business, that there are very, I would consider, I'm using air quotes, light annuity wrappers that you can essentially get access, keep the taxation the same, but not pay for a whole bunch of added bells and whistles that you don't want or need in the future. Yep. So you can do it in a much more stripped down way to keep fees and expenses more reasonable, and still avoid any, you know, trigger of taxation through that process.
So bells and whistles triggers for me, something else that we would want to look at before you make any changes, because I think, again, just going down the path of history, annuities, yes, the conversation could have been, how do I create more tax deferral? But over time, there were other benefits that may have been chosen to be added on to annuities, whether that's a promise on an income stream later in life, or even, you know, locking in a certain death benefit for your heirs. So I think annuities, more than anything, somebody may come to us, you open that box of chocolates, like I said, oh, there's an annuity. What's the likelihood that the consumer really knows everything about that contract? It's probably very low. And we would just want to make sure that if they were promised some sort of guarantee in the future, that you're not moving on from that annuity because you didn't like it for this reason or that reason, but now you're inadvertently giving up some sort of other benefit that may still fit your situation.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm glad you said that, because that was one of the things that I was hoping we'd touch on, because it is in this scenario. So I'll throw out another example, right? In that situation where you have an annuity, whether it's in a retirement account or not, if it does have that guaranteed income rider, that's how these insurance companies name it, right? It's an addition to your policy that's going to allow you at some point in the future to take that lump sum, or at least access to a lump sum, and turn it into an income stream for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
If it is that scenario where the cons outweigh the pros on making a change, then again, it's our job, and maybe with the client, right, to just shift the perspective to, okay, this may not be the most flexible to me if these are my kind of limited options here, and I'm going to look at it as the income stream. Then we would, from an asset allocation standpoint, right, thinking of how we would invest holistically, not just this account, but all of your investable assets, maybe we look at that guaranteed income stream as a bond alternative, meaning you can now change your allocation with your other accounts, knowing that if this is what you're quote unquote locked into, you at least have that in your back pocket, and you can adjust your entire portfolio to take that into account now, rather than you stick your same, you know, 60-40 allocation over here, and now you feel like you're way overweighted towards bonds with this guaranteed income stream. It's just another way to try to piece all of these things together that feels like you get to an end result that still feels comfortable.
Bingo. And that's the thing. It is all about perspective, right? I think sometimes you say guaranteed income, and that sounds wonderful. And maybe to a more conservative investor that doesn't like fluctuations, or somebody that doesn't have an old company pension, right? Guaranteed income stream, something they can rely on. Yeah. That sounds good. And we'll see these types of annuities in 403B accounts, whether you work for a school system or you know, government agency, whatever it is. It's just to acknowledge, as you said, what is the most efficient way to look at this now holistically? If that's what you have, whether that's was chosen by you or it's a part of a company plan, whatever it is, let's do the best we can to put you in the best spot to meet your needs, even if you can't do something different with that product.
Right. Yes.
I would shift then to life insurance too, because that annuities maybe not as flexible. That's a contract. That's very different from our ability to have an investment account and feel like you can change anything any day of the week.
Right.
Life insurance, they are contracts. You are contracted with that insurer by saying, here's the death benefit. Here's what I'm going to pay. When I pass away, this is what my heirs get. So we certainly go through assessments there too on insurance curve of life. Things change. People maybe needed insurance, then they didn't. They built some cash value. Maybe, you know, there's something different to do. Let's maybe just talk about the life insurance world of products and how we would review that depending on their phase of life.
Yeah. So I guess like annuities, insurance comes in many shapes and sizes. There's different types. What you hit on, and I guess where we see the questions on, should I continue this policy, is often a question we get when we meet somebody. They are those more permanent policies that have cash value. When I say permanent, that's as opposed to a term policy, right?
Right.
That has a set timeline. If you buy a 15-year term policy for whatever the death benefit is, at the end of those 15 years, you've paid the premiums. Let's assume you didn't die. Great. You didn't need it, but you've now paid for it and really haven't gotten any value back out of it.
And I would associate that most frequently with people that will tie a term or match it up with like a mortgage. Like, I'm going to cover, if God forbid I pass away, then this mortgage can be paid off. So I've got a 20-year term to cover the next 20 years of my mortgage.
Yeah. Yeah. So now the other side of that being a permanent policy, meaning as long as you pay the set premium, cash value can accumulate. As long as you pay those premiums over time, that death benefit is always going to be there until the day that you die, and it's going to go to whoever you have named as the beneficiary. Where we, as you hit on it earlier, we call it the insurance curve of life, right? Where younger family with kids, without kids, doesn't matter. There's usually mortgage, college expenses, all of these things that are liabilities during your earlier years in life. At a certain point, and where we see the retirees and the pre-retirees, kids are out of the house, mortgage may be all but gone, if not already. And now the feeling of, do I need this much insurance at this point in my life?
Yeah.
Should I continue to pay for this policy? What am I getting out of it? And that's where it can be a little trickier, because it ultimately comes down to purpose. And while it may not mean that you need the life insurance component purely anymore, where our conversations often lead is, well, what about long-term care? That's a concern of mine in the future. Is there a way that I could leverage this insurance that I have and maybe just change the purpose for long-term care? And going back to what we talked about with the annuities, there is this same IRS tax code, the 1035 exchange, where you can move that cash value from one insurance policy to another without triggering any sort of tax impacts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. I think that's probably a common one that we always want to review with somebody, that if it's not serving the primary purpose to protect loved ones anymore because you're financially independent, you're retired, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can we shift it to the next concern, long-term care? Do you shift it to create a paid up policy where maybe you're reducing the death benefit, but not having to pay premiums anymore? Now I'm just rambling, but are we thinking about estate planning? Does that death benefit serve a different purpose of maybe covering potential income taxation upon your death or estate taxes upon your death? Repurposing is possible before just canceling things.
Yeah. And I guess that, like everything that we talk about, ultimately comes back to the individual situation, the goals that people want to accomplish, and just how they view things, right? To exactly what you just said, if not the life insurance side of things, because there's debt and mortgage, and if I pass away, I need to cover my kids' college education. If that is not the primary goal, and long-term care may not necessarily be a concern, or maybe they have a separate long-term care policy, it can be shifting the mindset to, well, I'm going to continue this policy, but instead of thinking it's going to cover liabilities, it's going to create that legacy for my heirs. Yeah. It still is a tax-free death benefit that can be repurposed.
Yep.
Name the list of things, right? We can go through what boxes that could check in a financial plan, but ultimately that's the point, right? We just, like the annuity, the insurance fills that same side, that we just want to be able to fit that into an efficient piece of your puzzle.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
Yeah. And what we don't want to see happen is that policy just gets ignored.
Right.
Right. Because let's create the scenario where, okay, you are retired and you say, all right, I don't know that I need this death benefit anymore. Right. Mortgage is paid off. Kids are out of the house. But if you've got some value in there, that value, even if you stop paying premiums, or maybe you're paying like little premiums, your cost of insurance is still going up every year as you age. Mm-hmm. And you'd hate to see this scenario where somebody just kind of ignored that policy and all of a sudden your cash value just dwindled down to nothing. Yeah. And you paid for this policy your whole life to really get nothing out of it if now it needs to be canceled. So it's kind of like you're at that fork in the road where you almost have to make a decision with it. You know, am I going to re-leverage it? Am I going to stay committed to this? Am I going to move it into another product or have it be paid up policy? Or am I just going to take the cash out because I don't want it to dwindle down to nothing in 10, 15 years?
Right. Yes.
So it's the point is go through the review, right?
Right. Yeah. And I think that clearly that's where we want to play that role, right? It is educating people on their options because it really can be daunting if you're not in our position to really understand everything that's out there. And even if you were to do a quick Google search of your options, it's the internet is a wonderful and dangerous thing in that it feels like all of the information is at your fingertips.
Right.
But but without some context and some perspective, it may lead you down an incorrect path without fully considering those dominoes that we often talk about, the unintended consequences of any one decision that people would want, we would want some people to avoid.
Yeah. And I guess the only other things that kind of fall underneath that product realm to us, where it feels like somebody's made either a contractual obligation or they may not have as much flexibility as they would with, you know, other financial instruments or depending on how they invest, advisory accounts or things that feel flexible. Yeah. I think you said it at the onset. There are companies that will put out what we would call structured products, like that is a very specific offering, usually at a specific time. Yeah. And then we know people that have those real estate investment trusts, which again is just a packaged product. I don't know how deep we want to get into this stuff, but there definitely is more illiquidity things that you'd have to work through.
So that's the key. And so picking on REITs a little bit, those are primarily illiquid. And we are, when we use the term REITs, those are what we would consider non-publicly traded. So there are real estate investment trusts. There's real estate companies that you can buy on the stock exchange. You can buy the ETFs, mutual funds. That stuff exists. But these financial products are non-liquid. So essentially they are private offerings that you can be a part of. And until they either fully liquidate all of their holdings, right, all of their investment properties, and then send that money back to the investors, or they list to go public on a stock exchange, your access to your principal dollars that you put in there is usually pretty limited in scope. And we've, again, been around long enough to see more often than not, it doesn't end well because of that illiquid nature. Whether the real estate market is going higher or not, it just, that as a product, more often than not, we haven't had good experiences seeing those work out well for clients in the long run.
Yeah. And I know we're running the risk of like, making it sound like we're giving advice or not giving advice on things that we could or shouldn't at this point. The point I think we're trying to make is really it's our job to assess these things with you. If you already own it, you already own it. We want to, as you said, give you the education on what that now means. On the front end, it's just a core principle of ours that life changes, situations change, people change, economies change. We've seen all of this like very, very clearly over the last couple of years. Maintaining some flexibility in how you go about your planning, we think is really important. So anytime you're looking to sign the bottom line on whatever it is out there, whether it's something that we could get our hands on for you or not, you know, knowing that we're not able to offer a lot of the things we're talking about here, it's just to be very mindful on what you're signing up for.
Yes. Flexibility is key. I know we talk about that a lot. But it certainly comes into play here too. And we're talking about products, oftentimes that level of flexibility is decreased. And sometimes to a level that not everybody understands that they're getting into on the front end.
So here's the final offering to our listeners today, right? If we're not working together, we think it's really important for everybody to understand what they own. And if you don't, or you have questions, or you want a second opinion, that is why we are here.
Yes. Well said.
On that note, take care, buddy. We'll see you
next
time.
Same
bad place, same bad time, next Friday.
See ya.
Bye.
Hey everyone, Adam and I really appreciate you tuning in. Please note that the opinions we voiced in the show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be most appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, your accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to making any decisions or investing. Thanks for listening.